This is File 32, Cycle 3. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is April 18th, 2018. I am interviewing Caroline Kenny Birchfield. She's going to talk about entering Hotchkiss as a young lady, her work at Noble Horizons, her business with SOAR, the Jane Lloyd Fund, and anything else she wants to talk about. But first we'll start with, what is your name?
Caroline.
And you entered Hotchkiss with the first girl class in, what, 1974?
Fall of 1974, yes.
What was it like?
It was an adventure.
I'll bet.
And I think that's why many of us decided to enroll, because we knew that it would be part of history, and there was no script, and we would help write that script.
Did you come up against some discrimination from the boys?
Not just the boys, but the faculty.
I would expect so.
Yes. In fact, it's funny, with the very enhanced focus on a male-female relationships in the workplace and in its society in general, we are all, many of us, when I say us, I'm talking about women who were in school in the 70s and 80s, are mm-hmm. aghast at what we put up with unknowingly,
yes.
mm-hmm. unwittingly. I sometimes am not sure I can blame the male members of our community, although...
They had to be retrained.
At some level, I think, yeah, there was some culpability. But in any event, it was a very, very different world. And we have come a long way, even if
yes.
we have a long way to go.
Yes,
but, yeah.
yes. What was the ethnic population? Was it Asian... all Caucasians, Europeans, about the student body?
It was a pretty homogeneous population, but the school by then had made a very concerted effort to diversify socioeconomically and racially. And we certainly felt that, and I was thrilled for it. I mean, many of us came from very cloistered backgrounds where we had never really encountered people much different from ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
this was a wonderful opportunity. And I remember really specifically seeking out people who were different from me, having never had that opportunity before.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, well, I mean, that's part of the experience. And
that's
and
how
certainly
you teach
alive
tolerance.
And well today.
Mm-hmm. That's how you teach tolerance.
It is. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah, it will be a better world. Someday, maybe.
Did you run the 20th reunion at Hotchkiss? Or just involved as a participant?
I was involved in a number of different reunions as either a chair or a fundraiser or a social chair. You know, I've had so many reunions by now, I can't remember in
sure.
which I was specifically involved, but I've played a major role in all of them except for the last one. I was asked to play a role, but I really had to decline in the end because I had way too much on my plate. So,
I've noticed.
And I was sorry to do that, but it was the right thing to do, and they deserve someone who could provide that kind of commitment that I wasn't able to.
Now, sticking with Hotchkiss, they have a daycare center. Mm-hmm. And when did that start?
That started, I think, about a year before my oldest was born, so probably in around 1989, maybe 88, around there. When I first joined the community, there was no daycare at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cobbled together a room in the athletic building where parents could drop off children, and there was a kind of a makeshift daycare. And it was really Karen Norris who led the charge with the support of Cynthia White, who was the wife of the head of school
oh, yeah.
at the time,
mm-hmm.
to create funding, find funding, to provide daycare at Hotchkiss. And that was transformative. The trustees voted the funding in, the daycare center was built, and it was immediately full. And it's
good.
A godsend. And in fact, I have four children, and with the fourth child, I opted to stay at home. She had a number of very significant health issues, and just decided that after I needed to be at home. And my oldest daughter said to me, "Mom, that's so unfair, because daycare are my best memories of growing up." I finally stay home with a child, and I'm
kidding
for it.
Oh, Lordy.
So that's good. It's,
oh, gee. Now, the Hotchkiss students work with the extra program at Salisbury Central?
Mm-hmm, they do.
And what do they do up there?
Well, I mean, they do a lot of things that the kids want them to do, mm-hmm. the young extras kids, whether that's playing out on the playground and pushing them on the swings, playing basketball, building Legos. What we've begun to do is to try to bring some of our own ideas. And one of our students created Camp Week, for instance, and every day she would bring a different activity for a five-day sequence. So whether it was making friendship bracelets or making slime or...
that must have gone over well.
Yes. Yeah, nice and messy tie-dyeing, all sorts of things you can really get dirty in.
Yep.
But hugely successful.
Oh, sure.
And, a couple times we've not been able to go, and the students at Extras are disappointed, and makes me sad, but it also means that we've had some impact, and our Hotchkiss kids love their time. It's a great escape from the pressures of being an adolescent at Hotchkiss.
Being a kid again.
Yeah.
Being a kid again. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to form relationships, too.
Yeah.
Particularly, like myself, that's an only. It's very good to do relationships with other children because then it broadens your own horizons quite a lot.
Yes, absolutely.
Are you on the board at Extras?
I'm not on the board at Extras, no. I was somebody, they did approach me a few years ago, but again, my plate was full, so.
Your plate is always full.
Well, it's best to give these organizations an opportunity to find people who can really give them the time they deserve. And Extras deserves the very, very best. I'm awed by the commitment of the staff and the experience that those children get. We are so fortunate in our community to have Extras.
I left in 91, and it was not what it is today. It's morphed into something far more individual. But when I was at Salisbury Central, it was a place for the kids to do homework and to be safe for latchkey kids. Mm-hmm. Now it's morphed into far more than that,
yes.
Which is wonderful for
yes.
the community. Yeah. You worked on the community playground up at Salisbury Central.
I did.
When, 2003?
I'm trying to remember because my youngest was not in school yet, so yes, I think it was about that time.
Okay.
Yes, the old playground was identified as having arsenic in the wood. It was when they were using pressure-treated wood. And so we knew that we had to make a change. And it was a shame because the playground was maybe 10 years old,
if not that.
There had been a previous outstanding effort to raise funds, and but obviously the safety of our children made it paramount that we take that on.
It's located at Salisbury Central.
But it's called the community playground, yeah.
So it's open for everybody. Do
it
you
is.
Have, not lifeguards, but somebody to monitor the playground?
No, and it wasn't our idea to make it the community playground. It was the really the selectman's office. I mean, I had met with Curtis on several occasions and then with the Board of Ed, and there is no other playground in town. At the time, there was a very small and I think fairly primitive, maybe one of those old metal jungle gyms at the Grove, but other than that, there was nowhere
there was
else.
Nothing.
And there was not funding in the town budget to build a playground elsewhere, so we were told that this was the community playground in addition to the school playground. So families can come when the school's not in session, and they do.
And I'm assuming that it's behind the upper building.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's a wonderful, wonderful playscape. Yeah.
It is environmentally safe. And what do you have on the ground? Is it dirt? Is it wood chips?
Wood chips. We have wood chips. Yes.
Okay. Sore.
Yeah.
We do a lot with children in this town. Fortunately,
it's
a wonderful community.
It is.
Back when I was teaching, we did enrichment programs, but not to the extent that SOAR has done. And you were at the beginning, were you not?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me a little background on that, please?
Well, it was Zenas Block, the genius and extraordinary man that he was, who envisioned a program at school that would spark the genius residing in every child. Whether or not that genius was sparked at school, he knew that every child had something inside them that needed to be brought out, and he wanted to create a program that would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he worked very closely with teachers and the principal of the school to float the after-school enrichment program, and he was very clear that this was enrichment. This was never to be remedial. There were tax dollars available to take care of students who needed additional support, but this was to be enrichment. And it was never to rely upon any kind of tax dollar. It was privately funded, and he felt that education in a community was a reflection of the quality of the community, and that its commitment to its children spoke volumes about the kind of community one lived in. So, and he read that right because his community got solidly behind the idea of providing enrichment. And it also began to develop at a time when when families were juggling two careers, and so with school ending at 3 o'clock.
What do you do?
Right. Yeah.
Who was the principal at that time? Do you remember?
Tom Bradley, was Paul Sales, I think, that yes. Worked most closely with Zenas.
Okay.
And it was shortly after Zenas died that his wife, Janet Andre Block, formalized a board and made sure that SOAR would be operating in perpetuity. He had made her promise that she would do that, and so she did spend several years.
So the board wasn't developed really until 2008-ish, because he died November of 2008.
Yes, so it took probably a couple of years to get the board fully operational and functioning. It had always been a fund of the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation, so it was... it was well housed, but it didn't have formed leadership, and he wanted to be sure it had that going forward.
How did it get the name SOAR?
Again, using the ideas that Zenas had promulgated when he conceived of this program, it was decided that the operating name, which was the Salisbury Central School Educational Enrichment Fund, was not... was not what we really needed. So there was a contest at school, and families and students were invited to submit their ideas for a new name and to keep in mind the vision of the program when submitting their suggestions, and that whoever won the contest would be given a pool party. Hotkiss. They could invite anybody they wanted. We provide the lifeguard in the pool, and so that was a great incentive. And we received many wonderful and very creative and very charming and humorous from all ages. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But
SOAR was picked out of the bunch.
Yes, and it stands for Seek, Originate, Aim, Reach.
Perfect.
And it was an early committee. At that time, there was no board, and Zenas was still alive, and he was part of the committee of people that included Karen Lundeen, Ann Olinger, who was the first director of SOAR, and Ward Belcher. He was also very involved in the founding of SOAR. Maybe one or two others, and they all of the suggestions were anonymous. So they had no idea who would submit them. They only voted on the name.
Oh, that's great.
Came up.
It's nice to be anonymous. When you were developing the board, did you pick from a variety of people that had different skill sets?
Definitely, and Zenas felt very strongly about that. I mean, in his wisdom, he guided us, and even after he was gone, and he always envisioned SOARs being a part of the community and utilizing the many talented individuals or the talents of the individuals in our community. So we were very careful to include people who had no children at the school, maybe never even had children, but had talents and they could help us encourage others, sort of be an ambassador in the community, encourage others to share their talents with the school.
Did you include any teachers?
We always have a teacher on the board, yes.
Good,
yes.
Good. And your program directors, and you've had several.
Yes.
You said that Ann Olinger was the first one, and then Jennifer Law. Mm-hmm. I worked with her.
Uh-huh.
Lynn Mann, Nancy Heggie Martin,
and now Linda Sloan. Weezy Fallon.
Yeah, you can't forget
her. No.
I've got an oral history on her. You can't forget her.
Good, I'm glad you do.
And I've got one on Linda Sloan as well. Are you still on the board?
I'm not, no.
All right. What were the term limits for the board, or was it ongoing?
Well, we created that. We used to meet at Noble Horizons. We would meet in the conference room, and I remember the meeting at which we voted on the term limits, and there was a bunch of discussion, and we finally went with 3-year terms. And I think you could have 2 3-year terms, so you're off at 6. I was involved for much longer than that, but there were no bylaws. Until we created the bylaws, I was like a few others, just hanging around.
Well, yes, but you need the background. You need the experience from what went on beforehand.
Right, and originally there was just a program committee. The program committee basically lined up the programs, or at least recommended to the director through the monthly meetings we had what we felt the good programs would be, and try to connect her with people in the community and our networks. And then several years later, again, with Janet's assistance, we created a board. And so there's a program committee and then the board.
Okay. It costs to participate in these programs, doesn't it?
Almost nothing, and that again, we can thank Zenas for. He wanted to have a program that was affordable to every family in the community, and that means that, I mean, when the programs first began, they were $10. And you could take 6 weeks of dance class, or 6 weeks of...
For $10?
For $10. And if that was too much, you could just apply for a scholarship, and you were immediately rewarded one. You didn't have any application or, FAFSA or anything like that.
Okay.
It was, and I think the classes now are about $25. If there's a materials fee, it's prorated. It's very, very low. But if you're using, taking a class that involves pottery, for instance, you have to buy clay and glazes, obviously. But, again, if you need financial assistance, no questions asked.
Is it funded by the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation?
It's funded by private donations.
Private donations.
Yeah. The program kind of, it's spun off a little bit from Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation. Their endowment is still with Berkshire Taconic, but the operating budget is not.
We'll go on to your day job at Noble Horizons. What do you do? You have a title. I know you have a title.
My title is the Director of Community Relations. About a year and a half ago, I was also asked to assume development responsibilities, fundraising responsibilities, so I've done that as well, but it's a very small part of my job.
When did you join Noble?
When my youngest child started kindergarten, so that was in 2004. So she went off to kindergarten, her first day of kindergarten, and
I went off to
my first day at Noble Horizons.
Oh, Lord.
And I worked until 1, because at that time, kindergarten, I think, went until 12:30, and by the time she got off the bus, it was 1, and I had to be home at 1 to get her off the bus.
Oh, sure.
She'd had a checkered health history, very serious illness as a child, and so I wanted
You needed
to be,
the stability.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they all need that.
Yeah.
They all need
it's
that.
It's nice to be able to give it.
What do you do besides fundraising? And with your title, I would assume it would be public relations.
And I think it actually was originally public relations, but we ended up doing a lot more community relations, community events. My job is to bring people from the community into Noble Horizons and to bring people from Noble Horizons into the community, so that there's no feeling that if you move to Noble Horizons, you're leaving the community. You are not.
So you're mixing the two.
Absolutely, and all the time. And that's been a part of Noble Horizons since its founding.
Oh, yes.
It was always his vision.
When we talked before, and you've been here for a while, and I said, what's changed? And you said, oh, my goodness, ask me what hasn't changed.
Right.
So I'm going to ask you what hasn't changed.
What hasn't changed? It's the commitment to giving the very best to every single resident in this community. And there isn't a day that I am not awed by the level of kindness, passion, respect.
Yep.
It brings me to my knees sometimes. It's just kindness everywhere. That's the currency. We had an event to celebrate Eileen's retirement after 43 years, and a son of a resident who had been at whose mother had been at other communities throughout Connecticut moved here, and the son said, "I am actually not a very nice person, but when I come to Noble Horizons, I am a nice person. I almost cry when I say this." He said, I can't help but be a kind person here because everybody around me is that way, and you get caught up in it.
You, yeah.
And I just love that, and it's a great reminder to us of why we're here. And
I can subscribe to that because I was an inmate. I was recuperating and was here for a month. And it was an absolutely wonderful experience in everything, in absolutely everything. I didn't participate because I physically couldn't, but the kindness that was shown to me by everybody even the sisters of former pupils who knew me well. But it was a great experience.
I'm so glad. It really was. I'm so glad.
I had my husband here for a week for R&R, for me. He didn't want to come home. He liked it here. But again, he was treated with respect. He had lovely ladies that were kind to him. He was wheeled to the cafeteria or the dining room. Food was good. He really didn't want to come home. And what a wonderful, truly, what a wonderful accolade that is for Noble.
It is. It is. Yeah. And we work hard to earn it every day. You know, work hard is maybe the wrong word. It's inculcated in us. It's not like we have to work hard to be kind.
It just comes naturally.
It does come naturally. Exactly.
Nobody can be that nice and put it on.
And particularly, I mean, healthcare is stressful, and you know, it could be easy to deviate from that kind of, but it's just part and parcel of what it is to be at Noble. So it's organic to the community.
It was just really, I'm not getting paid to say this either. It was a marvelous experience for both of us.
Thank you.
Jane Lloyd Fund. Mm. Speaking about healthcare.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that?
I had just done a fundraising event with, her name, isn't that terrible? She worked at the bank. Anyway, we worked together on a Habitat for Humanity fundraiser, which we held at Noble Horizons, and she had gotten involved with the Jane Lloyd Fund at its inception, because the fund actually began at Salisbury Bank, and she was an employee of Salisbury Bank.
Not Tanya Tedder.
No.
Somebody else, okay.
I'm just horrified you're going to leave and I'll remember her name.
Then you can email me.
That's right, on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, so having just collaborated on a very successful Habitat fundraising event, she said, would you be interested in getting involved with the Jane Lloyd Fund? And my youngest daughter, I alluded to her health, mm-hmm. She was born with a malignant tumor. She was born with cancer. Mm-hmm. So we spent several years in the world of cancer.
Oh.
And so when I was given this opportunity, there was no way I could say no, because I was a lucky one. My child lived. Mm-hmm. And to this day, it means more to me than just about anything I do. It really does. And we've just come off a busy month, and we're busy because community members have come to us and said, what can we do to help the Jane Lloyd Fund? And so we had a dance at the White Hart with Harlem Line. That's the third year in a row. Darren Winston and his crew, they come every year and say, we'd like to do it for you again this year. Mm-hmm. This Darren Winston, he runs the booksellers and store in Sharon. And this year, the attendance was so large that we're wondering whether we can handle the crowd like that next year. I mean, and what a great, great problem to have. And then we had the Spring Splash a week later at the lake, and we had over 100 people running into the lake on a miserably cold and windy day. It was terrible. And then last weekend, we were at the Salisbury School because they host an annual carnival, and they directed the proceeds to the Jane Lloyd Fund. So that's the beauty of being involved with the Jane Lloyd Fund, is to connect with community members who want to make a difference and care so much.
What's the vision? Because it's different from just medical.
Yes, no, it really reflects the vision that this community had for Jane. When Jane was, she worked for herself, and so when she got sick, she couldn't run her business. And if you can't run your business and have no income, you face foreclosure, the loss of your utilities, you can't pay your car bills, you can't buy gas to get to treatments to try to fight your cancer. So community members decided to open a bank account for Jane at the Salisbury Bank, and after people got paid on Fridays or whatever day they got paid, they'd stop by the bank and put in whatever they felt they could. Mm-hmm. And those funds kept Jane in her home with her lights on, her heat on, gas in her car. I mean, extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And just tragically, Jane died, but the family was so overcome by the kindness of this community that they and some friends, Tanya being among them, decided to establish the Jane Lloyd Fund to provide that kind of kindness and support and financial assistance to other cancer patients in our community.
And it's still in very much.
It's thriving, and it's thriving because of the people in this community. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no paid employees, so everything that's given goes right back out into the community.
Are you still on the board of advisors?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
And what do they do? They have a specific job.
Well, we have to fundraise. Mm-hmm. That never ends. And as long as there's a need, I mean, our dream, of course, is to go out of business because there'll be no need for us. But until that happens, we have to fundraise. And This year, for instance, we've had a very significant increase in the number of requests. Now, I guess we kind of call that good news, bad news, in that we hope that maybe we've had an increase because more people are aware that there's help available. Mm-hmm. We hope it's not because more people are struggling with cancer.
Probably more people are aware of it.
We hope so. And but when we tell people we have a more significant need this year, people give.
Oh, yeah. So it's a fantastic community.
It is a fantastic community. So we do fundraising, and we obviously vote on the grants. We don't turn people away.
Well, you never turn people away. Mm-hmm. Are any funding, again, with the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation?
Well, the foundation has been great at identifying donors within their community who are interested in supporting organizations like the Jane Lloyd Fund. And that has been extremely helpful to us and very inspiring. Keeps us
going.
Yep.
Now, Jane died in September of 2005. And 13 years later, it's still growing. The community is still giving.
More than ever. They're giving more than ever. That's what's so remarkable. And it's been so long now that we actually have to take time to explain to people who Jane was. People no longer know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, it's been 10 years and more. Oh,
right,
yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Ambulance board. Mm. You were on that. How many are on the board?
No. Oh, I think we have a max of 17. So we vacillate. I mean, we don't usually go much below that, but
When did you join?
What's this year? Maybe 2008, 2009?
Okay.
2008, maybe.
The only one that I know of, I think, that's on the board is Elise Harney Morris.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was on the nominating committee, and I knocked on Elise's door and suggested that she might want to join the board.
Oh, she was so honored.
Oh, my goodness, and we were so honored. And, of course, because her dad was a founding member of, and the calls came into the White Hart.
Yeah.
I mean, it just meant so much to us that she was willing. And she's a very busy woman, but it's an honor to have her and her family involved.
I was doing an oral history with she and her mother on the White Hart. And she was just bubbling over that she'd just been asked, and she was so excited about it, and she was so pleased. And, of course, then we stuck in a little bit about the ambulance in that one.
Yeah.
But the community steps up regardless of the need. They step up.
For the ambulance, we had this campaign going for a new ambulance last year. It's
$250,000
to buy a new ambulance.
How much?
$250,000 for one ambulance. And so we, spent a couple of months planning and writing case statements and getting materials printed and, really, really super organized.
Yeah.
And literally within about 2 months, we not only raised the money, but we raised far more money than we needed. So it is now safely tucked away, earning interest, because it won't be too long, unfortunately, until we need a new ambulance. Our other ambulance is about, maybe 15, 20 years old, and some of the safety features.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we had to get this most recent one, because we were no longer compliant with the regulations in the state of Connecticut.
And they keep changing the regulations.
They do.
I was blown away by the amount of training. One of the EMTs is going out to New Mexico next week for a course on terrorist bombings. It's scary.
Yeah.
But he says, I got to go because I got to know.
Yes.
In case.
Yes.
And it's... Tremendous training.
Tremendous training. Yeah, it's a huge
commitment. For the people who do that.
I do too. I feel so humbled in their presence. I really do. And of course, I look out my window, and many times in the course of a week, I'll see the ambulance pull up here at Noble Horizons, and any time of day or night, they're out there for our community.
Oh yeah. Well,
extraordinary.
I had a lot of kids in school. I had every kid in school for about 24 years. And then to see them on the ambulance crew.
You must be so proud of them.
I am. In fact, when I had to go to the hospital and the ambulance was called for me, one of my former pupils came on the ambulance run. It wasn't his day. He came on the run because he knew I'd be scared. And I said, yeah, and it's for all the D's I gave you in science. But it made a difference.
Yes.
And they do that.
They do. And in fact, when my son had a bad sledding accident. He hopped on a tube at the end of the day with a friend. It was one run, and it just happened to be the one run that he shouldn't have taken, and he ended up flying off his tube and smashed on the snow, and it was at dusk, so the ice kind of formed a layer over the snow. Anyway, when I was fine, I got a call, and I went rushing to the scene, by which time the ambulance was already there, and I looked around at the crew working with my son, and it was his pen pal from second grade, Dr. Jared Zellman. It was Jackie Rice, who had taught him swimming at the Grove. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine the comfort we all took knowing that those people were in charge of my son's life.
Oh, yeah, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
My husband had to go to the hospital for something, and the head of the emergency room was my next-door neighbor. You know, and I'm, you know, really upset. And she, Jean, go home. We'll take care of Foster for you. And it made a difference.
Yes, yes. You believe it. You really, you do.
You do believe
yes,
it. You
yes,
do believe
in
it.
Your heart, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Strategic planning for the library renovation in 2013-2016. How did you get involved in that one? Fundraising?
Claudia asked me. You know, Noble had done a lot of events and had been very involved in the community. And I think because I live at Hotchkiss and I work at Noble Horizons, she saw me as somebody who could represent a spectrum of ages, obviously.
Yeah.
And because we had done community events, I had a handle on what, you know, just the direction that they were going.
Yeah.
Books were not necessarily their primary.
I know.
The motivator to get people to use the library, and so this was really a time to try to reassess what is a library in the year 2016,
mm-hmm.
and you know, where do we see ourselves in, you know, 2020, 2025, and it was an extremely interesting process, and we were led by some strategic planners who do this, you know, as a profession, and it was...
They did a good job.
Brilliant.
They did a good job.
And the library is, I think, probably stronger than it ever has been. It's flourishing. Yeah.
Most of the comments that I have heard have been very positive. I know at that time Claudia changed from a Dewey Decimal System to a more general system of cataloging the books. But people that come into the library are very impressed with the beauty of it. And the variety of things that are on offer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just books. I'm a book person.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily use the technological stuff, but it's there.
It's there, and there's education provided, too. So if you don't mm-hmm. know it and you're afraid to learn or don't even know how to begin, there's wonderful assistance. They really talked a lot, and they talked a lot about how to make it easy to use the library. And one of the biggest challenges was the fact that the lower level was not connected to the upper level.
Yep.
And that the fact that they were able to achieve that through their most recent renovation was mm-hmm. a tremendous triumph. And it took a lot of persistence on the part of the library board.
Oh, yeah. I've done a couple of the board members, and they really pushed.
Yeah, because they were told many times by many architects, it's not possible, at least not with the budget you have.
Yeah. But they perceived, and they did a wonderful job with the campaign to connect, to do the fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the community happened from what I understand very quickly, and nobody thought twice about it. This library, it's a, you know, central to our community. We must have a thriving library.
Yeah,
we will do what we need to do to keep it.
We had a librarian in the past that didn't want any community activities, and she very definitely turned everybody away.
Hmm.
Oh yes. This was back in the 90s. And when Claudia came in, she wanted to reverse that. That's why her office is down on the main floor.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to be on the desk.
Yeah.
The previous librarian wanted to be upstairs, away.
Mm-hmm.
Claudia was very outgoing. She wanted to be a community library. She wanted it at the center of the community. And she's done a magnificent job
with
that.
Yes, she certainly has.
Other than being on the board, did you do any fundraising for this one? Or no?
I did not, no.
Okay.
It was just for the strategic planning. Yeah, that was a special committee assembled for that.
And how many were on that committee, roughly?
Oh, my gosh, I think probably 8 or 10, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because they did have strategic planning informational meetings for the community.
They worked very hard to involve the community planning. I mean, this is a resource for the community. What does the community want? Where are the gaps? What are we missing? Mm-hmm. What do you need? What mm-hmm. it was?
They put out a survey, didn't they?
Extremely well conceived. Yeah. Yes, they did.
Girl Scouts.
Girl Scouts.
Girl Scouts. So fun. About 1995?
That's my oldest daughter. Yes, we started with the Daisies. That's what you are when you're in kindergarten. You're a Daisy.
Oh, Lord.
And she was 5 at the time, so yes, 95.
Well, when you go from a Daisy, then do you become a Brownie?
You do become a Brownie.
And a Brownie is second grade. I didn't start till a Brownie, so.
Oh, no, first grade.
First grade?
Yes, you're only a Daisy for a year.
Oh,
and then you
gee.
Become a Brownie, I believe. And that may all have changed, and that was
all. Oh, undoubtedly.
I have no idea.
Like everything else.
Right, right.
And then, I'm assuming you got into Girl Scouts because of your daughter.
Yes, and I had been a Girl Scout leader. I mean, I had been a Girl Scout myself and had loved the experience, and it was one of the best decisions that I ever made, that to be a leader, that is, because
good.
It allowed me to not only get to know all of her friends and children
yeah.
who weren't necessarily in her friend group, but all of their parents as well. And when you live in Hotchkiss, you can be very cloistered from the community. We have everything we need.
Pretty
we don't
much.
Have everything we need, but
yeah.
you can lull yourself into thinking you have everything you need there. Your food is provided for. Your fitness is there. Your books
yeah.
are there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You
don't have to go outside.
Every
campus.
Now and then you have to get gasoline in your car, but if you don't go anywhere, then you don't need it. But anyway, so that was fantastic. It was a great privilege to be able to lead that troop for so many years and sell all those cookies. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah,
I remember the cookies.
And to do service projects, loved coming up with different ways to connect with. I remember doing a planting project for the Salisbury Historical Association when they had the house.
Oh, the Holly Williams House.
Thank you. Yes, and
I worked
we
there.
Did it for the Salisbury Ambulance. And I remember once we had Jackie teach us about CPR, and I mean it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I still see those girls now, and I love them as much now as I did then.
Oh yeah. You get attached.
Yeah, well, you would know as a teacher.
Oh, yeah, they're still my kids. I don't care if they're 59, they're still
yeah,
my kids.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I, in doing the orals, and I get to interview so many of my former pupils, and I am so proud of them, and I try to make very, very sure that I tell them
yes.
how proud I am of them, because they've done wonderful things with their lives. And, you know, well, I wasn't an academic. You don't have to be an academic.
Right.
The things that you're giving back to the community, whether you're a policeman or a fireman or ambulance worker, it's just, and I particularly appreciate the town crew.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, and they're sort of the forgotten element. And I started to do them, and, you know, what do you want to do me for? I said, because you're so important to the community.
Oh,
we couldn't function
yes.
without you.
Right, that's for sure.
Oh. You know, and then, you know, the light bulb would go on, and then, oh, yeah, yeah, I do, you know, I do that. They don't think about it because it's their daily job.
Right.
But we couldn't function without
that.
I came down my road this morning, and there was an accident at the end of the road, and here's one of the volunteers out there monitoring traffic, and we're so lucky.
I know. And it all seems so seamless. I mean, it's just this
yeah.
network between, you know, the accident happens, and all of a sudden something goes off. Exactly.
It's like SWASA. They know that they're going to be doing whatever it is that they're going to be doing for the ski jumps, and they just show up.
Yeah.
I've asked a couple of the guys that are on the board, and I said, well, how about volunteers? Oh, I don't know. We've got maybe hundreds. And I said, you know, do you come? No, they just appear.
It's true. Because yeah. I'm trying to get the Hotchkiss kids, because I'm doing the community service in Hotchkiss as mm-hmm. my other job. And we were very eager to volunteer. The kids had never heard of a ski jump before, and so the whole idea
oh, yeah.
was you know, fascinating to them. But trying to get a specific time when we could show up and a specific task was...
Oh, that's hard.
It was impossible.
Yeah.
Nobody... Well, you know, you just kind of show up and you just do whatever, which is wonderful. It doesn't work
yeah.
so well for our very regimented community of students, so we didn't actually get to volunteer.
Yeah.
But
it's so
yeah, they
wonderful.
Elicit the most extraordinary devotion. I'm awed by what they do.
It's a fascinating community.
Yeah, I see what they do, and I no one other organization can do what they do, I don't believe.
I don't think so. And it's been going on for years,
mm-hmm.
and I've got stories about when they used to have to hand truck in the snow and pack it
that.
Down.
Yeah.
You
they
know,
would drive to Simsbury. I remember going to a hockey rink, and they get the
yeah.
ice shavings. And,
yep.
Oh,
yep.
my goodness.
Yep.
Who would do that? SWASA would do that.
Sure. Oh, yeah. They're very much invested in the
it's the romance of it all, too, I think. It's
and
it's
fundraising been... for that new ski jump
yeah.
that's the only one in New England, I think. And they, you know, people contributed. there was, again, all private donations.
Right,
and they,
right.
The guys that I've interviewed went into it saying, we'll never get this amount of money. And they did. And in about half the time that they expected.
Right, exactly.
So, Salisbury Forum.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. When did you get involved with that one?
That was just about a year ago.
Oh, good. We've got something to know.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Okay, 2017-ish. Yeah. Why?
Well, I was asked, and I was very flattered and honored to be asked. I have attended many of their programs. I've always been grateful for the quality of...
Who asked you?
Speaker. Jeanette Weber. And I got to know Jeanette through Noble Horizons because she was involved, in fact, I think actually was the head of the Festival of Trees. And then she got involved with the Fall Festival, and we ran the Chili Cook-Off for years and years in our community, and so we worked closely.
And the Chili Cook-Off is connected with...
Well, the Noble Horizons sponsored Chili Cook-Off for about maybe 10 years. It was huge. It was a huge event on the town green. And so we got to know each other better because of the Fall Festival work she was doing and the big event that we hosted on that Sunday of the weekend.
Who's president of it? Of Salisbury?
Donald Ross. And he owns
Hollywood.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he called me the other day about oral histories. How many are on the board for Salisbury Forum?
Well, it's actually an interesting question. It's very small right now, and our big charge is to enlarge it. We're down to about 8, and it was just through a series of circumstances, somebody moving away, somebody had to leave the board because of
it happens.
Busy.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, so,
are there term limits on that one?
Yes, there are. Yes, and that's a fairly new board, too. I mean, I was not involved in the writing of the bylaws, but I know that they created themselves out of nothing within the last 8 or 10 years.
And Claudia was involved in that one,
she
I
was.
Know.
Yeah, she was a leader.
Yeah, and I did Bill Litauer on that.
Mm-hmm. He's terrific.
As well as the Lake Wenonskaponic Association.
Mm-hmm.
People are multifaceted in this community. They do so many different things.
That's very, very true.
And are usually very quiet about it. And humble. You know, it's just what I do.
Right.
You know, it's not an ego trip. It's just, this is what I do.
Right.
Which is, I think it's remarkable. We have 345 oral histories done on the community in all aspects, and I get the same thing over and over again, how generous the community is, how kind they are from cradle to grave,
right.
Which is a wonderful summary of
a
community. Anything that you would like to add that I haven't talked about? Because you do so many things. I may have missed something.
You know what? It's just such a privilege to live in this community because you are able to do all of these things. People there's faith and there's friendship and camaraderie, and we all want to make our community as I don't even want to say productive, but we just take care of each other.
Yes, we do.
We take care of each other, and what an honor in this crazy world of ours. It provides a...
we're a little oasis of kindness.
We are, and it's also, I was describing Hotchkiss this way to somebody actually, it's something that's bigger than we are, and we're so fortunate to be a part of it, and we want to do everything we can to foster it and nurture it and preserve it, and that's where the privilege comes in, to be able to have a hand in that. For future generations. So I'm sure we'll feel the same way. You know, we're just carrying on from what those before us left to us.
You know? Thank you for a wonderful, wonderful interview.
Thank you.